and it has persisted through lower prices in the past. When Saudi Arabia, OPEC, and other nations tried to break the back of American producers in 2015, U.S. companies largely persevered. Between the summer of 2015 and September 2016, crude oil prices fell below $50 per barrel. Four of those months were spent below $40. Granted, more than 100 companies in the U.S. and Canada filed for bankruptcy in 2015 and 2016, but it represented a very small portion of overall production. No matter what financial woes lie ahead for the U.S. oil industry, a taxpayer-funded bailout isn't the answer. Though the industry hasn't asked for one, some within the administration are floating the idea of a financial relief package. Doing so would be a terrible idea. As George Mason economist Pete Leeson notes, profits and losses do for producers what traffic signals do for drivers. They tell them when to go, slow down, and stop their productive activities. By communicating which resource combinations consumers value most and which they don't, profits and losses direct economic traffic, informing producers how to produce. If government prevents ineffective producers from failing, the red light on the economic traffic signal stops working. Companies learn lessons through economic failures. They improve efficiencies and lower costs to remain competitive. We don't know how long the demand side effects of the coronavirus will impact markets, or how long the increase oil supply at all costs standoff will last between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But we can count on the resiliency and entrepreneurial spirit of America's energy sector to keep on innovating. Allowing markets to self-correct will be best for taxpayers, consumers, and the...
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 47 and cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Culture section from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Sunday, March 15th. Column by Melanie Nicholas. Use common sense, but don't live in fear. Bodacious got a coupon in the mail last week. She held the bright pink card to her nose, closed her eyes in reverence, and inhaled deeply. "Mom," she sighed, "Bath and Body Works is having a sale." I had to laugh. I remember feeling that way when I was in college. Layering the body wash with their matching lotions and sprays made me feel so feminine, so worldly, as if Plumeria was the very height of sophistication. Later, cucumber melon became my signature spring scent, because who doesn't like to smell like a fruit salad when it's sunny outside? We made a date for a girls-only shopping trip after school ended Friday. As soon as we went through the doors, my baby was in heaven. She tried lotion after lotion, stopping to wash her hands after each sample. She loves overly sweet, candy-scented fragrances. Fortunately for me, the store was having a buy three, get three sale. She got margarita cupcake, and I got one of my old favorites. As we wound our way toward checkout, we stopped to peruse the Manly hand sanitizer scents. My son was out, and it sounds as if cold and flu season is sticking around. I like for him to have hand sanitizer in his school backpack just in case he needs to wash his hands and he isn't near a sink. We were trying to pick one when another mother-daughter duo literally knocked us out of the way. They were breathlessly telling the young store clerk that they needed more hand sanitizer to ward off the dreaded coronavirus. "We've been everywhere, and no one has any sanitizer left," the teen said. "I even looked on Amazon, and they are out." The mother then proceeded to dump a completely ridiculous number of hand sanitizer bottles into her basket. they began to speak more and more excitedly about the impending doom and devastation brought on by the coronavirus. Bodacious, who has Batman hearing, began to look terrified. Eyes wide and lips quivering, I decided to intervene in my naturally cheerful and helpful way. "You need to wash your hands more often," I offered good-naturedly as I grabbed one bottle of Midnight for Men hand sanitizer and then walked away. But those two aren't the only ones hoarding supplies like water, hand sanitizer, and paper goods. Friends across the country have posted pictures of empty store shelves, and I even saw a viral news clip of three adult women having a fist fight over a 12-pack of toilet paper, a full-on brawl with screaming, cursing, and hair pulling. It wasn't even Charmin Ultrasoft. It hurt my heart to see. I hurt for the woman who was attacked. This kind of trauma will haunt her. And I hurt for the other two who were so frightened about world collapse that they were willing to hurt another human being over something as lowly as toilet paper. It will not be this fancy version of the flu that cripples civilization. It will be civilization itself, the uncivil masses and the fearmongers that brings us to our knees. I have friends who have been forced to cancel once-in-a-lifetime trips to Italy. Others are terrified to look at their retirement investments because of the stock market roller coaster. And plenty of folks are nervous about spring break trips with their littles. And I get it. Really, I do. No one wants to go broke or get sick. But we have to be strong and we have to hang in there. We have already battled flu, strep, the stomach bug, and bronchitis at my house this season. My wonky immune system seems to be catching everything. But the threat of coronavirus won't keep me from doing the things I want to do, nor will it make me buy 100 cans of pork and beans, 40 gallons of water, and all the toilet paper at Target. It will, however, keep me out of jungle gym ball pits, away from buffets and salad bars, and from traveling to China, Iran, South Korea, and Italy. That's just good common sense. But I refuse to live in fear. That's not living. God made us love and to do His work in this world. So wash your hands, stay home if you feel sick, and don't be around people unnecessarily if you have a compromised immune system. Always share your toilet paper when you see someone in need. And if you smell like cucumber melon while you do it, well, that's even better. Melanie Nicholas is a full-time mama and writer. She and the Hubs have two children, Parksalot, 11, and Bodacious, 9. You can follow her amazing adventures fighting grime and insecurity on Facebook, Instagram, and at www.melanienicholas.com. Out and About, Salisbury Honored as Top Hand, by Julie Donnelly. Salisbury Industries founder C.R. Dick Salisbury was honored with the highest award given out by the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, Top Hand Award. He received it during the PBPA's annual banquet, which was held at the Petroleum Club. A video presentation of Salisbury's life, which included interviews with family members, friends, and industry leaders, spotlighted his love of family, taking pictures, work ethic, and his philanthropic generosity. The evening speakers were David Arrington, Tommy Hicks, and Bubba Salisbury, his son. Arrington highlighted Salisbury's love of God, family, and country. Hicks called him a job creator, a proud Texan, and talked about how his family was a testimony to his priorities. The younger Salisbury said he was excited to honor his dad because of everything his dad has done for his family. He gave a more personal insight into the honoree, including funny stories involving his love of photography. He also recognized Wayne Pritchard, who was his dad's first employee 53 years ago and is still with the company. Salisbury was presented with a gold plaque that honored his professional achievements. When accepting the award, he said it was an unexpected honor. He added that he was proud to be in the company of past honorees. He thanked God, his family, including his wife of 60 years, Amelia, and his family of company employees. Vitex Tree Adds Color to Your Landscape by Jeanette Castanen, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. A great option for adding beautiful lilac cover to your landscape is the Vitex, a small tree that is on the list of recommended trees to plant in the Permian Basin. Texas Lilac Vitex is also known as Mexican Lavender, Lilac Chaste Tree, Hemp Tree, Sage Tree, Monk's Pepper, Indian Spice, or Vitex. It is a native of China and India, although long ago it became naturalized throughout certain areas of the United States. Records indicate that Vitex has been cultivated in the U.S. since 1670. It grows best when planted in an area that receives full sun and with well-drained soil. It can handle alkaline soil and prospers in hot and dry climates. The blooms are beautiful and purple and are very attractive when in full bloom. Watch out for the messy seeds that may fall from this tree and sweep to prevent tripping. They look great in your landscape and are also great and friendly for pollinators to stop for a drink and pollinate your yard. I have seen many bumblebees attracted to these trees. Plant a Vitex tree and experience the beauty of the purple blooms while helping the pollinators every spring. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 432-498-4071 in Odessa or at 486-4700 in Midland. And now here's a column by Howard Garrett of the Dallas Morning News. This is the one question you need to ask before purchasing garden product. When teaching how to solve plant disease problems, I spend about 20% of the time talking about disease control, compared to 80% or more of the time on insect control. That's because disease control issues are so much easier to solve when they occasionally pop up in the organic program. Plant diseases are all about microbiotic activity being out of balance. When microbes are out of whack, pathogens create problems. When the microbes are in their proper proportions, pathogens such as Rhizoctonia, Pathium, Fusarium, etc. function in a positive way. That's why the toxic chemical disease control products like Baleton and Daconil don't work very well, especially long-term. They indiscriminately kill the good guys as well as the bad, throwing things further out of balance. Most plant diseases can be solved by improving the soil to a healthy condition. All organic products in basic organic program help control disease to some degree because they all help improve the soil. When the soil is healthy, plants are healthy. In healthy soil and healthy plants, there is a never-ending microscopic war being waged between the good guys and the bad microorganisms. And the good guys win. Disease problems are simply situations where the microorganisms have gotten out of balance. The primary cause of imbalance of soil leading to plant disease problems is the use of high nitrogen synthetic fertilizers and toxic chemical pesticides. Plant diseases are usually caused by three major types of living organisms: fungi, bacteria, and viruses. A good thought process when purchasing gardening products is to ask yourself this question: if I buy and use this product, will it help or hurt the life in my soil? Pretty simple. Soil moisture is also important for the health of the soil. Moisture is needed, but not too much moisture. Drainage is a key ingredient for the prevention of diseases. Beds, lawns, and tree pits that hold water and don't drain properly are ideal breeding places for many disease organisms to flourish, get out of balance, and damage or even kill plants. Once again, the Natural Organic Program helps. All the recommended products help the life in the soil, and the healthy soil holds moisture at the proper level longer and helps drain away excess moisture more efficiently. What are those products? 1. Compost and organic fertilizers. 2. Rock minerals like lava sand and azomite. 3. Sugars like molasses and cornmeal. High-quality compost alone will cure many plant diseases. Whole ground cornmeal will do it even more efficiently. They both work by stimulizing a beneficial fungus called Trichoderma that overpowers the pathogens to bring them and the soil back into balance. I know there are critics and deniers. Ignore those sad folks who won't give it a try. March is a great time to prune many shrubs. By Lee Reich, Associated Press. Don't prune your forsythia, lilac, or mock orange yet. Anything you cut off now will result in that much less of a flower show this spring. Except for these and many other spring flowering shrubs, however, March is a fine time for pruning many trees and shrubs. It's easy to see what to cut on leafless plants, and cuts heal quickly. Here's a list of some pruning jobs to take on now. Get your tools ready. Before you start, sharpen your pruning tools. Plants heal most quickly from the clean cuts that result from sharp tools. Get out a whetstone or file to touch up blades on hand shears and loppers. With an anvil-type pruning tool, where a sharp blade crosses against the flat edge of an opposing blade, sharpen only the sharp blade on both sides. With a bypass-style tool, which has two sharpened blades sliding past each other like scissors, sharpen both blades, but each only on its outside edge. For beauty, prune summer flowering shrubs, such as butterfly bush and summer sweet clethra, severely, today or sometime before growth begins. These plants bloom only on new shoots, and the more new growth they make, the better the bloom. Stimulate luxuriant new growth by lopping these plants to within a few inches of the ground. As soon as buds start to swell on hybrid tea roses, remove wood chips, styrofoam rose cones, or any winter protection you've provided, and prune. Cut any canes blackened by disease or winter injury back to healthy tissue. Then, shorten remaining healthy stems according to the size of the plant and the number and size of blossoms you desire. As a general guide, cut weak rose stems back to about a half foot, and strong ones to a foot or more. Less severe pruning results in a plant that is larger, with blossoms that are more abundant and earlier, but smaller. Prune shrubby dogwoods like Tartarian, Silky, Blood Twig, Gray, and Red Osier. Their youngest stems are the ones that are the brightest yellow or red in winter. Cut to the ground some or all of the older stems to make way for new ones that will provide next winter's show. Shrubs such as witch hazel, flowering quince, and rose of Sharon require little regular pruning. Do look over them now, though, and cut away diseased or dead wood, as well as any stems that are obviously out of place, either visually or because they are rubbing other stems. Prune hydrangea according to what kind it is. Hills of snow, smooth hydrangea, flowers on long new shoots later in summer, so cut all stems down to the ground now. Also, prune big leaf hydrangea and oak leaf hydrangea. but shorten stems only a tad, back to the fat flower buds near the ends. Prune the tree-like Pygii hydrangea very little, snipping off old flower heads if you find them unattractive, and removing and shortening stems here and there. For flavor, shrubs bearing edible fruits, although they blossom in early spring, do need pruning now. That will increase the quality of fruits by letting the plant pump more of its energy into perfecting fewer of them. Pruning also allows stems to bathe in more light and air. Since most of these shrubs blossom in spring, and those blossoms go on to become fruits, their stems shouldn't all be lopped to the ground. Instead, some of the oldest stems should be lopped to the ground to make way for younger ones, and some of the youngest ones should be lopped to the ground so the remaining ones don't crowd each other as they age. What's left are some older, some middle age, and some young stems. How old is a stem when it's time for its removal? That depends on the type of plant. For instance, blueberry stems are most productive on stems up to 6 years old, and gooseberries on stems 2 and 3 years old. So cut away stems older than 6 from blueberry bushes and stems older than 3 from gooseberry bushes. Red raspberries are a little different. They bear on stems in their second season. Prune by lopping to the ground any stems that bore fruit, as evidenced by remains of fruit stalks and peeling bark. That leaves an abundance of stems that first grew last year and will bear this year. Remove enough of them to leave the sturdiest and healthiest ones, with about 6 inches of space between them. Ever-bearing raspberries bear fruit on both first and second season canes. For a harvest season from midsummer through fall, prune as described above. But for the easiest of all pruning, just mow the whole planting to the ground now. This pruning does sacrifice the midsummer harvest, but you will still get a late summer and fall harvest. By the way, those forsythias, lilacs, and mock oranges do need annual pruning, but the time to do it is right after their flowery show is complete. Lee Reich writes regularly about gardening for the Associated Press. He has authored a number of books, including The Pruning Book and Grow Fruit Naturally. He blogs at www.leereich.com/blog. He can be reached at garden@leereich.com. Hints from Heloise. Check your house often to prevent termite damage. Dear readers, check your home often for termites because they can be dangerous to your house. Termites eat wood, so check the porch, decks, steps, and other wood structures for termite damage. You may see a pile of fine powder under furniture or holes along stud lines and walls. Call a professional exterminator ASAP. Don't delay because termites could be eating into the supporting structure of your home. Take these steps as well. Try to keep termites away from your house. They constantly dig dirt tunnels looking for water. Do not place wooden planters or piles of firewood next to your home. The wood and water attract termites. Heloise. Easier way to clean paintbrushes. Dear readers, after you have finished painting, cleaning the paintbrush can be a messy ordeal. Here's a neater way to contain this problem. Pour cleaning solvent in a heavy-duty, clear plastic bag. Put the brush bristles inside. Shut the bag while holding the handle outside of the bag. Work the solvent through the bristles by pressing the outside of the bag. Mission accomplished and less mess. Heloise. Pet accidents on carpet. Dear Heloise, we just brought home our first puppy and are dealing with our new pet's accidents on the carpet in our living room. We know that we are going to have to train him and get him outside to do his business. But for now, can you give me some ideas on the best way to clean up his accidents? Beth in Texas. Dear Beth, first, get to the mess right away. For solids, scoop up solid material ASAP. Mix a quarter teaspoon of liquid dishwashing detergent with 1 cup of mildly warm water. Apply to the stained area. Rinse several times with water to get rid of all of the soap residue and blot dry. For liquids, soak up as much of the urine as possible by using old bath towels. Stand on the towel to really absorb the urine. Then rinse the area with cool water and blot well with a clean dry towel. Next, apply the above mixture. Rinse completely with warm water and blot well. However, if this problem continues, buy an enzyme-based pet stain and odor remover. Heloise. Family potluck party. Dear readers, when family members bring their favorite dishes to the party, other family members might love these dishes as well. So for your next gathering, ask family members to write and print out copies of the recipes for the rest of the family. You can compile them into a family cookbook. Heloise. Cleaning comforters. Dear readers, whether you have cotton, rayon, or synthetic blankets or down comforters, they get dirty and need to be cleaned regularly. First, read the care labels to learn what to use to clean them and the best way to do so. Here are some Heloise hints to get the job done well. For a quick fix, fluff the blanket in the dryer on the cool setting only. Add a fabric softener sheet for freshening. For a really thorough cleaning, first, pre-treat and soak stained or soiled blankets. Then, wash for around 5 minutes in cold or warm water on the delicate cycle with detergent and oxygen bleach. Check the label first. Dry blankets on low heat, gentle cycle, or hang to dry. Heloise. Dear Abby, from Sunday, March 15th. Man resorts to hiding snacks when hungry family drops in. Dear Abby, my wife's family drops by our home several times a week, usually unannounced. I don't mind them dropping in, but what does bother me is they bring their kids and expect us to feed them during the visits. It has gotten to the point that I hide our snacks and beverages in the bedroom, because if I leave them in the cupboard, they disappear. They often end up eating the leftovers I had planned to be my lunch for the next day. I've talked with my wife several times about this situation. She agrees with me, but says there's nothing she can do about it. I wasn't brought up that way. I would never think of going to someone's home, opening up cupboards, and helping myself to food without an invitation. Also, I'm retired and on a fixed income. Am I overreacting, and must I just keep my mouth shut? Frustrated in the West. Dear Frustrated, this is your wife's family, and she is the one who should deal with this. All she has to say is she would appreciate it if her relatives ask when they'd like some food or drinks, because their foraging through your cupboards has created a problem for the two of you. Dear Abby, for the past few years, I've encountered a problem with cashiers in stores. I pay with cash and generally have change coming back to me. When the cashiers return my change, they hand it back in one big wad along with the receipt. When this happens, I must stop, lay everything down on the counter, and separate the different denominations. Then I have to place the different bills into my wallet. I have tried asking them to place the receipt into the bag, but they usually don't listen. Also, some of them reach for the next customer while I'm still putting my change away. It is so frustrating. Is there something I can do differently? Bothered in Marshall, Texas. Dear Bothered, I have two suggestions. The first is to discuss your concerns with the store manager. The second is to shop elsewhere. Dear Abby, I want to thank people who are kind, generous, big-hearted, and considerate. Those unsung heroes deserve all the kudos we can give them, and they rarely receive the praise they are due. It would be a lot more difficult to get through life without folks like them. I don't think I'd be alive today if not for the kindness they have shown me. To each and every one of you, from the bottom of my heart,